The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
An assassin on the streets of New York, the collapse of a government in France, the formation of a government here, the construction of a Trump administration, and joy to be unconfined as the toy show comes to our screens tonight. That's the menu for our Friday forum. We're joined by Thomas Byrne, TD, Meath East, Fianna Fáil, Minister of State, and continues, I suppose, until the new administration in sport and physical education.
Until the new Taoiseach is elected, yes.
Yeah, so you're still that.
Yeah.
How much you'll do between now and January the 20th or whenever it might be is another question.
Well, I'm speaking at the Sports Law Conference today, and then I'm going to the Soccer Writers Awards lunch, so that should be nice.
That'll keep you busy. All right, Richard Boyd Barrett returned for Dunleary. Congratulations to you, Richard.
Thanks very much, Pat.
But you're never nervous. You're well got in Dunleary, aren't you?
Well, you never take it for granted. The people of Dunleary are an intelligent electorate, so you definitely
hence your result. All right.
And well, I didn't mean that.
We have Orla Ryan, news correspondent for thejournal.ie. And Orla, welcome. And Alice Leahy, director of the Alice Leahy Trust. How old is the trust now, Alice?
Pat, I hate to tell you, 50 years next year.
50 years next 50 year. Years. My goodness. Back to the days of you and Baggot Street Hospital.
That's right.
And Paddy Kavanagh dropping in on you.
Brendan Behan following me around the casualty department. I have seen, and Pat, I am looking back at letters. I've kept so much because I want to mark it next year. I'm looking back at letters I wrote to politicians, wrote to different people. I could write the same letter today. The only difference, we didn't have typewriters then. We were lucky if we had a landline, but we could be writing the same letters today.
Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, which brings us happily to the collapse of the French government. Richard, have you been following this in the middle of our own political travails?
Somewhat, and particularly because I do think there's something for the parties of the left in this country in the context of the current formation discussions and the aftermath of the election to take from the Popular Front experience in France, where we've got a very polarised situation. We've seen the rise of the far right with Marine Le Pen. Where it looked as if we were certainly facing a far right government, which to me would be a major, major problem. Yeah. But that situation was turned around by the various parties of the left getting together what they call the Popular Front and changing the equation. Now, it's still unstable. It's still very polarised. The government has fallen in France, as from what I can see, because Macron appointed a minister that didn't reflect the outcome of the results from the point of view of that left.
Yeah,
that
he
won
was
the
a
election.
Bit too ambitious in that budget. He was told to cut 60 billion or between tax rises and cuts. 60 billion was what he had to find. And people were saying, you know, he might have got away with 20 billion. And
yeah.
Instead he went hard and as a result lost.
Yeah, big austerity, and I'm sure, although I don't know all of the details, but I think the Popular Front and the left, who, let's remember, won that second election, would argue and did argue that there didn't have to be any austerity and that what the government should be actually looking at is wealth taxes. And it was a very specific component of the Popular Front's program was that there should be wealth taxes so that the very wealthy in France would pay the price of austerity rather than working people. And I do think that's
But there's another
very relevant
agenda.
Argument.
Lara Marlowe explained it to us yesterday that Marine Le Pen wants to stay out of jail. It's a bit like a Trump situation. She faces charges of fraud on the EU, taking money that was not rightfully due to her and giving it to her party. And if she can cause Macron to resign, she feels sure she'll be the next president and therefore, like Trump, be free, exempt from prosecution. So, interesting.
Yeah, well, I just hope that the momentum that developed from the Popular Front challenging Marine Le Pen, and if, you know, there's issues of corruption, I would hope that would even turn more people in France away, as well as the far-right noxious politics that she represents. I would hope that would be the case, but she's certainly shown herself to be a bit of an opportunist, I think. Whereas I draw a certain amount of hope and optimism from this new left that has emerged, and I would like to think that the left over here might take a leaf from the French left's book.
Thomas,
well, look, what I would say is, I mean, look, French politics is French politics. It's things going to happen, but we have to look at it from our point of view. That France is one of our closest neighbours, is our closest EU neighbour. It's been a very, very close ally to us at difficult times. And I think it's really, really important that we keep that in focus as well. And we've got to continue to build up links with France. One of the practical things that's been done now is the Celtic interconnector between France and Ireland, which is going to bring nuclear power actually into Ireland and wind power hopefully into France as well. So that's going to have real benefits for the country. So it is absolutely critically important that we maintain really strong links with the French government. Our team in Paris does that. But we do it in so many other ways as well. It's not just government, it's just all of society. And, you know, France is such an important member state, such a large member state of the EU. It's critically important that we keep in touch
with
them.
But instability in Germany and instability in France at the moment, maybe it feeds into the result of the election where those who are advocating change, a lot of people looking at the international scene, no, we don't want change. We can be stable here.
Politics has become much more fragmented, and that's across the world. People wonder why are Fianna Fáil, you know, we used to be in 40%, but the reality is that political systems across the world have seen this fragmentation. I think for us to do so well out of that, I think is incredible this week. It's hard to believe. But the impact of inflation has been absolutely massive. There are people who can pull the lever on inflation, such as countries that control oil, Putin, etc. And other governments then are left to deal with the consequences of that. So I think it reminds us why we really need to take control of our own energy supply as best as we can. And we've tried to do that with France, but there's a real hunger out there for stability.
Yeah, there's one thing that you guys can do, whatever the makeup of the next government is to reform the electricity market. Because the way it works is that no matter what and how cheaply energy is generated, the price they get for it is for the last kilowatt from one of the fossil fuel generators.
Look, the only way to reform that is by broadening out the sources. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're stuck...
No, but I mean, if I could buy green energy...
You could stop profiteering.
But you could just say, this is the price we're going to pay for green energy, not the price we pay for the last kilowatt hour of gas generated.
I absolutely agree with that, I think the only way to practically do it is actually to have more green energy. That's the reality, because otherwise you will always be stuck for some fossil fuels and you're not going to be able to pay the price because we don't have them.
Unless we have massive battery storage or hydrogen generation, we can't
it brings me back to this Celtic interconnector, which is going to bring energy in from a different source
in
France.
Free market dogma.
It's not free market dogma. It absolutely isn't. It's to try to just diversify it.
Orla.
Sorry.
Just on that no confidence vote, I suppose, I think one of the most interesting things for me was the fact that it's very rare you see the far left and the far right united, but there was such anger over Michel Barnier's budget that they were actually united on this, and Marine Le Pen, they backed the left motion. There was 331 people backed the no confidence motion. They only needed 288, so that shows the level of anger there. So it'll be really interesting
to see. But
they
have a joint enterprise to get rid of Macron.
They do. They want to get rid of Macron, and obviously now they have gotten rid of Barnier, but because of a quirk in the French electoral system, they can't hold elections until next July. So Macron now has the unenviable job of picking someone that they will agree on, that everyone will agree on, somebody who's centrist, but obviously he picked Barnier, they didn't like that. So if they pick someone else they don't like, you know, will the same thing happen?
But they will decide not to like anybody if they think that Macron will go. If he fails again with the government and then maybe a third time, three strikes and you're out, I suspect.
That's true. They're playing the long-term game. He's adamant he will stay till 2027, but they want him out, so they could well reject whoever the next PM is as well.
Alice, do you have any views on French politics?
It's hard to add to your analysis, Pat, because you have covered everything I want to say. But I do follow politics with great interest. I am concerned about the instability right across the world. I am also concerned about the price of energy. And I suppose what I found interesting looking at the television last night, to see the civil servants out there protesting.
Yeah, they were protesting against the budget, which had been abandoned even before their protest began.
Right. Yeah.
So once they'd made up their mind to go out, they were taking a day off.
They were taking a day off. But you wouldn't see our civil servants doing that. But there are huge problems. And I suppose in the middle of all of that, it's interesting to see how our election worked out.
Off you go.
Yeah. I was watching it with great interest. I was looking at, you know, there were yards long, all the names on the paper, and you thought, oh, this is going to be appalling, and yet we need a stable government. There were some interesting characters out there. I would be very concerned about the number. We're very lucky we live in a democracy. We can vote, but I am very concerned about the low turnout, and often the people who complain most don't bother to register to vote and don't vote. I think maybe we should go down the road of Australia where voting is compulsory.
Yeah, we had a list of countries yesterday where voting is compulsory, about 20 countries. Yeah. say you have to vote.
And I think if you're a citizen of the state and you have an obligation to make an effort to make the state a good place to live in, but to do that then you turn around to get your politicians to do it for you. Why not get up off your backsides, register?
Yeah.
And
now,
vote.
There are huge questions over the integrity of the register. I mean, there was an estimate during the week that maybe 500,000 extra names are there that should not be there or doubled up.
That's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, but we were having a discussion. I don't know what the politicians think about it. How do you go about assembling a register that is accurate? Do you use the PPS number? There are a few people who use double PPS numbers, you know, to get double dole and things like that, but they're very few. Is the PPS number it? And then don't forget, if you get a job, you have a PPS number. You mightn't be entitled to vote if you don't have the citizenship. Do you know what I mean? How? What's the way to get a register that we can all believe in?
Well, I'm not sure who's coming in first. Look, can I just start on the point about the low turnout? It is worrying me, the low turnout.
But is it real?
I think it is real. Okay, even looking at the what's called a marked register for the local elections, it was very clear that in some of the poorest and most neglected areas of my constituency, and I suspect this is true right across the country, the people who are most need change in high numbers didn't vote. And that is worrying. To be honest, it impacted.
But you were the
on
one.
Bus, but
early on, long before the 10-way debate, you were the one saying the left needs to offer a coherent alternative.
Absolutely,
but there were no takers.
It didn't. We argued.
Ivana Bacic kind of was a bit of a taker.
A little bit, but it was more in the context of negotiating with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. That's essentially what she was arguing, that the centre left, and that's what she's still arguing. The centre left should use that to negotiate with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But to my mind, the message that was sending is there's only one outcome here, and that's Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and therefore it's only a question of who props them up. And I feel that that hurt the left vote, and I think it sent a message to younger people who really want to change and to working class communities, there isn't going to be a change. And I think some people drew the conclusion, therefore, why would I bother voting?
I mean, in some ways, it seemed like a foregone conclusion even going into the election. It was quite a short campaign, just 3 weeks, but it did look like it's always going to be some variation of what we have now. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and somebody else backing them up. Obviously, the Greens have now been decimated, so all the smaller parties will be looking at that. Labour will remember very well when they were decimated a few years ago after going into power. So there is that split in Labour about whether or not they should go back in. Alan Kelly's come out in favour of it. We have Marie Sherlock and Ivana Bacic, other people kind of ruling it out or almost ruling it out. So, I mean, there are these talks going on today with Labour and the Soc Dems, and that is interesting what may come of it, but it's almost a foregone conclusion that it will be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and a few independents. So while it's interesting that people on the left are having these talks, they're not going to be a power unless there's some massive shock in the next few weeks.
Thomas?
Just like the opposition benches, there's been a lot of, I suppose, infighting in some ways. I mean, you know, Richard would have been quite critical of the Labour Party over the last 10 years or so, I would say. So the idea that the left gets together all of a sudden, I think, is a little bit fanciful. I also think that the idea that you arrive in Dáil Éireann and say, I don't want to be in government, I think is incredible too, because there's no point sitting there in the opposition benches.
Nobody's saying.
Yeah, well, there are some people starting to say it, and certainly the last time some people declined to take part in coalition.
I mean, all of the party leaders, when you talk to them, they were all saying, I wouldn't be in politics if I didn't want to affect change, and the only way to affect change is
to be
in government.
After the election, some of them then say, oh, we're okay, it's okay, thanks, but no thanks. And then I think that's just not right. We hard decisions have to be taken, but actually, as Fianna Fáil has shown, if you do what people consider, I think, quite a good job, a reasonable job over the last number of years, yeah, we want to go further, people will reward that. So parties should be brave enough to take that on board and to see the experience that we've had.
Alice?
First of all, Pat, can I say I forgot to congratulate the two gentlemen in front of me for their re-election, I think.
I think virtue is its own reward.
But I have to agree with a lot of what Thomas is saying. I've heard too many people who haven't got the courage to go into government if there is an opportunity, because how can you affect change if you're constantly in opposition? But I think we have some very good politicians in opposition. But this morning I was reading on the Irish Times, Gerard Hurlan was on about the independents. Now, are we going to have a lot of independents, they said, who will have even more clout than ministers? And that is, I like the freedom of independence, but if you're in a government, I just wonder.
Yeah, no, Thomas might be able to tease this out for us. I mean, you won't be in the frame, Richard, I presume, anyway, supporting this.
I'll talk to him after the show if you want.
No, but you see, I do just want to correct the record here. First of all, we have been very clear. We want a left government. We want to be part of a left government. So, but saying we don't want to be in coalition with the centre-right does not mean we don't want to be in government. It means we do not believe we can deliver the change that our voters and other left-wing parties voters are looking for with Fianna Fáil.
You would be the mudguard if you went in, is that
exactly it? Right. So we have a very firm view on it. And by the way, that choice has never been offered to the people of this country ever, right, in 100 years. So that's our argument. And secondly, I do want to challenge the narrative, for what it's worth, because I believe being in government, if it's a left government, can deliver change. But the narrative that the only way you can get change is by being in government is simply historically not true. The biggest change that have ever happened in this country or anywhere else have come through external mobilisation of people power. Yeah, but always.
We're not really in a revolutionary period here at the moment either, like Richard. We're here in a democracy. We're parliamentary democracy.
How did repeal the Eighth happen? Because of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? Absolutely not, right? It happened because of a social movement. How did the abolition of the water charges happen? Because of a social movement. How did the right to be in trade unions happen in this country? Because of social movements,
all of those,
not because of what happened
in
the Parliament.
All of those things need parliamentary votes for them to happen.
Because you're forced into doing it.
It isn't, but there are lots of other issues as well that need to progress on a day-to-day basis. And I just forgot as well to thank my constituents for electing me as well. I think it's important to say that.
Now, I want to ask you, I was talking to a number of movers and shakers at the Convention Centre last night when the Business and Finance Awards were there, and they were trying to figure out what is the price for the independents. What did they get? And the suggestion was one rotating permanent senior ministry that would be shared among the seven or eight independents. They could be minister for this or that or the other, and it would move among their ranks, and two junior ministries that might rotate in the same way. What would you be prepared to concede?
Well, I'm not here on the radio to negotiate. That'll be left as the party leader and the negotiating team to do over the next few weeks. And to be totally frank about it, Fianna Fáil, I think we've been successful because we emphasise policy and how we're going to deliver more houses, how we're going to, you know, keep this economy as stable as it is and get more people into work. That has to be the priority.
But
you need the numbers in the Dáil to affect the majority to have a government there, and we're working to do
that. So what's the price you're prepared to pay?
The price I'm prepared
to get
to pay.
Guaranteed support.
Price,
you want stability, 5 years, you need to get guaranteed support.
The price I'm prepared to pay is to implement the policies that we've put forward. Now, with 48 seats in the Dáil, that won't be as difficult as some other parties, but it has to mean more housing. It has to mean, as Micheál said, a red line on the issue of therapies for children with special needs and special schools and special classes.
You think you weren't in government for the last
year? Absolutely.
But we were in government, and we emphasised these issues. Some of them we made more progress than others, and I think people have rewarded that in the election.
I mean, the idea of a rotating ministry, we've all gotten used to a rotating Taoiseach now, but a rotating ministry, if, for example, it was the regional group, that group of ATDs headed up by Michael Lowry, how would that work if it was like every 6 months you're going to have a new minister of whatever? I think that would be
the key. It would be a minister for whatever.
Well, but as in, you know,
wouldn't
that idea.
Be a key
of,
one.
And maybe, you know, two or three or four or five of that group will, you know, split off and they will go into power, not all eight. But if there's going to be a rotating ministry, that would be incredibly difficult. And in terms of the rotating Taoiseach, then obviously I think Fianna Fáil are hoping to have the first 3 years and then 2 years for Fine Gael. But, you know, the government may fall within 2 or 3 years. So does that mean Simon Harris doesn't get back in? So it'll be interesting to see what they
land on. But
that's
the way the cookie crumbles. If you do a deal like that, I mean,
exactly,
Simon Harris and Leo Varadkar between them didn't quite get their share because they didn't go the full, they didn't go to March of next year. So that's the way.
Well, the one thing I can say with Fianna Fáil, and we've shown this over the last number of years, is that whatever deal we agree will be implemented. Absolutely implemented. And Fianna Fáil,
Richard, I want to go back to you on the question of the left, because the reluctance of the Soc Dems and Labour to engage with the possibility of being that mudguard, if you like, to be the Greens 2.0.
Yeah.
Do you understand that, or that question of aspiration before the election and then coyness and reluctance?
Well,
after?
We shall see. But I would certainly urge them not to go in. Right, because that will force Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and independents that are effectively gene pool Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael into a block, and then create the possibility of a serious left opposition. But I also think the left need to ask themselves, okay, I mean, the Soc Dems and Labour essentially took the green vote. That's what happened. But I think if the left wants to actually be in government, I think they have to address the issue of low voter turnout among young people and among particularly neglected working class
communities. But you know the people who decided the Sock Dems are for me or the Labour Party are for me, the resurgent Labour Party, and having given them their support on the basis that they would try to bring their policies into some sort of government formation, then decide, no, we're not going. All the people that voted for us, we're going to abandon them because we won't get everything we want if we go in. We'll only get a fraction of what we want.
I do not see, because there has never, ever been an instance that I can see where parties of the left or environmental left, if you want to call the Greens that, have gone in as a minority party with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and done anything other than demoralise and disillusion their own supporters, right? And failed to actually implement the policies on which they stood. There's not a single good example in the entirety of Irish political history.
It is very clear that the left is fragmented, and I think there are power struggles at all levels in it. And even last night, watching on television Ivana and Alan Kelly, the body language spoke volumes. And Alan was a minister in the last government. So
he was leader of the Labour Party as well, of course.
And he was a good housing minister. So, I mean, but I am very interested too. I'll be watching all this, you know, because all the game playing and where did they come to nominate people for the Senate where there's no democracy at all and half the population can't vote and we are losing out on an awful lot of expertise where value could be added to the government in place. So I'll be watching that with great interest too, Pat.
Yeah, it seems, I know it's our constitution lays down the way these panels are. Yeah. They're totally outdated now, the idea
totally
of these
outdated
panels. What do you think, Thomas?
Well, I mean, we had a referendum on Shannon's abolition. It didn't succeed. There's been some reform. I mean, obviously, the university panels have to be expanded out. The panels are there. You have to qualify for the panel, so there is.
But that's
that.
What's wrong. A lot of people are excluded. People can't vote. People can't. Yeah. You know, that is wrong, and it's a very powerful part of our state, and it's not democratic.
Yeah, it's look, it's there. There are other examples like it. I mean,
but
I think
the fact
France
that it's there
well.
Doesn't mean it's right.
No, but there are other examples. I mean, in France, I think councillors have a vote as well, or mayors have a vote for.
But
for,
that's
for
all wrong.
But it is
for instance, another area, Pat.
I mean, when you know, Shannon reform when it wasn't passed, like they said there would be reform when it wasn't abolished, I should say, and we're many years later, and there hasn't been any reform of that.
It's undemocratic. It should be democratised. I don't have a problem with the idea of a second house, but it should be completely.
That's what I was going to ask you. That the second chamber. Do you think it's useful to have a true second chamber that can stop things? That can maybe only like the House of Lords for a while. Eventually, the
as long as it, everybody has input to it. Every area of society has input, and at the moment, it's elitist. That's the reality.
Look, it's not easy to defend, but it's not the House of Lords, which is some hereditary, but mainly appointed by various governments. At the very least, local councillors who vote have been elected by their constituents as well. So it is an indirect election.
How about the councillors who now have become TDs? Others will be co-opted and people haven't voted for them. And the next thing, they'll be Lord Mayors down the road. So,
indeed.
That is something we ignore completely.
We
friends of friends will be nominated suddenly as a councillor. Well, they haven't been voted in. And I think that's very wrong.
But it's also Buggan's turn in the Lord Mayor of Dublin. It's Buggan's turn. Whose turn is it this year?
Yeah.
And you get somebody who may or may not be good, who may not even have been elected.
Who could have been
well,
just
they are
co-opted.
Voted by other councillors. So
but
how
the councillors, I mean, the councillors, there are a handful, 61 councillors in Dublin, that's the council I know. But I think that is a huge problem and it's never addressed by any politician because it'll be for friends of friends.
Well, we could have council by-elections when those vacancies do come
but that's
up. We don't have them.
Very rare.
But certainly, no, we don't have them, but it's something. Maybe
and you won't have
consider.
Them now.
Well, look, they're not going to happen now because no one's going
to. But don't forget, you have that in Europe. You have an MEP who goes on to a different life, maybe to contest the Doyle elections, and somebody you've never heard of gets put in.
Well, at the very least, they're set out at the day of the election, I suppose. Yeah. That's the difference with the local authority.
Right. Anyway, we'll take a break.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Through a few of the texts here, rotating ministry, how ridiculous, what benefit to the citizens? People Before Profit need to stop banging the drum about a left government. It's simply not going to happen ever. I'll come to Richard in a moment. Good morning, Pat. Just as there's merit in compulsory voting, so also should it be compulsory for bipartisan negotiations to form a government. If the top two parties are politically polar, i.e. right and left, then each should be equally positioned to lead and explore a coalition for government, and each TD should be obligated to engage. So says Miriam in Leitrim. As for the Greens, they got a lot being in government, so don't blame the government for them not being voted for. So what is the reason they didn't get the support they had expected? On the one hand, they're concerned about low voter turnout. On the other, they want a myriad of elections to replace every dog and devil that leaves an elected office. How on earth do they imagine that having a plethora of elections will entice more voters? It's really a case of let's do the same thing over and over again. Richard.
Look, I just want to say there was four issues that absolutely dominated the election. The housing crisis, the health service, the cost of living and special needs and disability, right? They absolutely dominated.
Childcare, actually,
you're absolutely right, although I'd link that to the cost of living. And all the interesting talk about government formation, we shouldn't lose sight of those are the things that people are concerned about and they want results on. Agreed. And there are a debate about how we actually address those. But one appeal I want to make, while all this faffing around, I know some of it has to happen, right, but the delay and talk of a delay of government formation till February means those issues are going to be neglected. And most importantly, something needs to be done in the run-up to Christmas for the children that are in emergency accommodation. Right. And I would say we can't wait until February to address that situation. The numbers reached another record on the Friday of the election. And there is children now facing possibly their second Christmas in emergency accommodation. It is utterly unacceptable. And right here and now, I want to put it up to the caretaker government or whoever to get some action to address that scandal as we head into Christmas, because it is not acceptable. And it was the top issue, the question of housing and homelessness, and it needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. I personally don't believe the government have the politics to this. They say they have, right? It is a good question. Are the government going to change their policy or are they just going to continue the same policy? But action urgently is needed on this.
Alice.
Yes,
I mean, you deal with homeless, rather a different kind of homeless person. You and I have discussed over the years how there are different people, some who do not want simply to have a roof over their heads.
And there are. And as I was leaving this morning, there was a man by the name of Kieran, and I know he's listening in because he told me he'd be listening in, and he sleeps in the Phoenix Park. He's been coming to us for years. And I just want to say to him, Kieran, if the storm comes, will you just make sure to ring the free phone? Now, we 1-800-724-724. Now, we made a submission to the Joint Iraq Subcommittee on Housing, and we're conflating the two issues. There is a huge housing problem. We're all aware of that. It's huge. It is, and I think no one government will be able to solve that. I think the politicians need to get together around the table. There are no easy answers. But the issue that I have particularly have a huge concern about when we talk about health is the psychiatric services. The services are truly appalling. And the people with mental health problems, there are no services at weekends in some parts of the country. There are people who have very clear mental health issues. And the guards are the only ones you can call on to deal with people. And it's not a crime that they have a mental health issue. This has been appalling. It's the Cinderella of the health service.
Do you think there is, though, generally speaking, Alice, a 5-day-a-week attitude to all the problems we have, whether it's shelter for people, psychiatric services, hospitals?
Well, I think there is. And also, I think technology is very useful, but now you can't get through to anyone. I mean, recently I had an issue of somebody I knew who was living next door to a house run by a housing body with a man sleeping in the front garden. And the neighbours couldn't get anyone in charge to ring, couldn't get through to the body who was getting a lot of money to run the service, couldn't get through to anyone. And there is a huge gap because I think a lot of the service, and I think we are offloading a lot of the services to the NGO sector. And I think down the road, I think a lot of these agencies will be seen in the same light as the religious of today. The people looking after the children, the people looking after the mental health problems. I don't know how you answer it, because I just had an email the other night from quite a controversial neurosurgeon, Phil Kennedy, who was a doctor in Ellen Park. And he worked with me over 15 50 years ago, and he sends me data from America. And this was an article written by an American doctor working with people who were homeless in America. And I looked at it and I said, God, did I write that article last week? Because the problems there were exactly the same. And I think we're not having a conversation about that. It's, for instance, a very good example, Pat, before the election, everybody saying, release the figures of homeless people, you know, release them 2 days before the election. The reality is the figures tell us very little. They can tell us about housing, all right, but they are not addressing the other issues. And the poet of 100 years ago in Scotland who said, a statistic is like a drunken man leaning against a lamppost for support rather than illumination. I think that captures exactly what's going on.
Orla?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were record numbers in those stats, but as Alice said, they don't paint a full picture, but there were almost 15,000 people now homeless in those stats, and it's gone up every month or almost every month for the last few years, so it's really shocking. So I think Richard makes a fair point in that if we don't have a government until February, you know, we still need to act on key things like housing and health. And I did enjoy Vincent Brown's tweet the other day where he said Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael could have a government together by next week.
Yep.
I don't think that's practical, but what is practical is that there is still a government in place, and while we can't pass new legislation, the government absolutely...
So what do you say to the pleas from both Alison and Richard?
But those pleas don't need to be addressed by legislation in the next few weeks. They need to be addressed by government action and civil
that's
service action.
So that's
what we're saying.
But that is absolutely possible and absolutely will be happening over the next few weeks.
What will you do then, Thomas?
The Minister for Housing is absolutely...
But it's not all about housing.
I get that too, and the Minister for Mental Health is there. And in fairness, they're both on our negotiating team. Which for various reasons, but one of the reasons is the policy areas that they cover. I think that's really, really important. So I think the issues of mental health will have a very, very strong focus in the programme for government. But in the meantime, the ministers are still the minister and go on.
Yeah, but look, one thing, and this is a plea at this stage, we have to there has to be an expanded winter initiative, let's call it that, right, where we seriously get in and try and alleviate the hardship and suffering that people are facing into as we head towards Christmas. And that cannot wait till February. Children, families, individuals, often who are sick, have complex needs and so on, there needs to be dramatic, radical and urgent action. And can I just also mention the other big thing that happened just before the election was the balloting of health workers for industrial action. And the reason they are balloting for industrial action is over the staff numbers being unsafe and a massive stress and demoralisation of health workers in mental health, in the hospitals, in community health, in child and disability network teams, you name it. Massively understaffed, massively stressed. Young people are walking away from working in the health services in this country and leaving the country with the skills that we actually need to make the health service work. And that has to be addressed as an absolute matter of urgency.
Whether you're left and right, how do you build what seems to me, this one word that we can talk about, capacity. You know, we don't have enough guards. We don't have enough health workers. We don't have enough housing. We don't have enough hospital beds. You could just capacity. Teachers, we don't have enough teachers. So how does any government build that capacity?
These are very difficult questions and difficult as well in the context of migration, because clearly there is some migration required to make sure that some of these posts are filled. We have an expanding population, so we absolutely need to fill these jobs. Through the public sector pay agreements, trying to make sure that they are paid, civil servants are paid more. I think one of the key things is housing, though, particularly for teachers who have gone abroad for a short time.
There's capacity shortages there.
I think we can build what we've committed to build over the next few years, which will make a difference. And there has been more houses built over the last while, and that is a key part of it.
Just one quick point to make on that. While it was a very good day for Fianna Fáil overall last week, it was interesting to see both the Minister for Health and the Minister for Disabilities both lose their seats. I do think it was more nuanced. It wasn't just because of their ministerial roles, but people are very angry about the issues in
health. But the Minister for Housing, where everyone's complaining, ends up with a bumper top of the poll situation.
That's true, but I think it's very angry, and obviously the standout moment of the election was Simon Harris's. I know he's Fianna Fáil, or Fine Gael, not Fianna Fáil, but that interaction he had in Kanturk with Charlotte Fallon. So that, I think that shows how angry people are about disabilities and the lack of funding, particularly in that sector, but the wider health sector in general.
And this is the important, people need to discuss, and it hasn't been discussed, the detail of why the health workers have balloted. And these are health workers in mental health services and others. What is the reason they are balloting against the pay and number strategy? Because they are saying there isn't the effort the government claims they were making to recruit people to these jobs. They're saying there was an embargo to stop the recruitment we need to fill. You can't recruit unless you're trying to recruit.
Is there a problem between you have the minister, you have the Department of Health, and you have the HSE? I mean, is there an issue there that no politician, who, from whatever colour, will actually be able to control the HSE?
Well,
yes. And the way they run their show.
There has been an issue.
Money's pumped in.
Well, Micheál Martin outlined one issue, and that was the issue of putting therapists into special schools, where there was government agreement to do this, but it didn't happen. And that's why he said, he was quite angry about this. He said, this is a red line issue for the next government.
But maybe
it has
they
to
can't
happen.
Find therapists.
No, they were imposing budgetary constraints. That's what paying numbers is.
They can find them, but there was inter-agency competition. And I think that's the problem. We want to do it through the Department of Education.
I want to say two things. One is, I think an awful lot of people working at the coalface are very frustrated because they're just not being listened to. You know, there is a question of money, there is a question of housing. But we have all these strategies, all these reports, and surely, and no one group has the answer to homelessness or all of society's problems. And a lot of the problems cannot be solved by government alone because it's the human condition and it's the society we're living in. But I cannot understand why there are good people in all the political parties and in the world of politics, independent. Why can they not get together and sit around a table and have a conversation like this? It's all about people are chosen, there's a task force, but we are still leaving a lot of people working at the coalface behind.
Orla.
Just coming back in on health, I know from speaking to a lot of people who work in health, a lot of managers and staff members, they were all waiting for the embargo to be lifted in July. They thought, brilliant, we'll finally be able to hire people, only to be told then that any of the posts that were vacant at the end of 2023 no longer exist.
Yeah.
So when you look at the ballot that was taken just before the election, we have Foresight, Unite and the INMO, all over 90% of each of those individual unions' Absolutely. Memberships voted in favour of industrial action.
Before we conclude, Storm Dara is looming, as you probably know, named by us, I presume. Dara, D-A-R-R-A-G-H. Will it lead to you staying in, Alice, instead of going on the town and watching the toy show?
I haven't watched the late since Ryan left. I've occasionally watched the toy show. I don't have children, but maybe the inner child in myself might tonight.
Orla.
I haven't watched it in many years, but I did enjoy it. I have fond memories of being a kid and I am a big fan of Home Alone. So maybe I'll flick it on tonight and see how the set looks.
Thomas?
Well, we've been busy taking down posters over the last few days, and I suspect there's probably one or two still up, but I've told my team don't take them down during the win tonight, so we'll risk the litter fine rather than risk any injuries, but we think most of them are down.
So Storm Dara might take them down for you.
Yeah, well, hopefully not.
Toy show tonight?
Probably not. My kids have grown beyond that, but I hate to sound pious, but I think seriously, the best Christmas present would be to help some of the people we were talking about earlier.
I absolutely agree with that. And there's no doubt the Department of Housing, the Minister for Housing, and indeed the ministers who lost their seats as well, will be there at the coalface, just making sure that everything the government can do at this point can,
and when you think about it, a child, maybe for the second Christmas in a row, in a hotel room watching the toy show.
It gets unconscionable, and that's what we all must have at the top of our conscience as we enter into this thought.
Well, look, on that note, thank you all very much for coming in for the first post-election version of the Friday Forum. My thanks to Alice Leahy, Director of the Alice Leahy Trust, Orla Ryan, News Correspondent with thejournal.ie, Richard Boyd, Barrett TD, returned for Dunleary, and Thomas Byrne, TD for Meath East, returned in that constituency, and still Minister of State for Sport and Physical Education, pending.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.